All right, we're going to start on Mem Chedem and Aleph in the second line. Just before we start, at the end of the first Tosafot on Mem Chedem and Aleph, he just mentioned something as an aside, but the aside that he mentions is very interesting halachically.
Omer Rabbeinu Shmuel. Rabbeinu Shmuel is the Rashbam. To muter lasum tapuchim etzel eish, samuch lecha sheikha. One can put apples right by the fire before nightfall. Afal pishlo yichlu litzlot mi bel yom. Even though they cannot be fully cooked during the daytime, meaning before Shabbat comes in. Then achalim tvei, moshe en chayin, mitabshil. He says, if I look comparatively, we know that machal ben dusai is the threshold for an item that's cooked to remain on the fire. He says that it's more likely that a person would eat an apple raw than he would eat the meat that is cooked machal ben dusai. And if machal ben dusai is sufficient to leave it on the fire and not have a problem or an issue with shiya or shemi yichate b'gechalim, then that's certainly true for apples that are raw. So from here, it sounds like that with regards to the din of shiya, there is no issue with apples because they're considered to be edible in that state, and therefore leaving them there, we're not worried about shemi yichate b'gechalim. But then Tosfot continues and says,
hitmin tapuchim imakdeira. If he put in the hatmana, he put a pot in the hatmana, but he also put tapuchim, he put apples in there. Asur lachzir karim v'kastot ala gdeira, and one cannot return the pillows, the mattresses, whatever is covering the gdeira. Shivhem alo sif alo to karim, af agav de'in sham tapuchim mutar lachzir. If there had not been apples there, it would have been fine. Kishyesh imak deira tapuchim, when there are apples there, asur de machzir kodem shnit bashlu, because if he puts them back there before they're cooked, Nimtza mivashel b'Shabbat. Turns out that he's cooking on Shabbat. Very, very interesting machloket that comes up with regards to apples. What's interesting about apples is, you know, I have in my kitchen a bunch of raw apples. And every day I take an apple and I eat an apple. It's totally edible, fine to eat, without cooking it. So then the question arises, if you cook it on Shabbat, what is the status of such an apple when you cook it on Shabbat? Is that considered to be mivashel b'Shabbat that you're cooking? Because you're changing the status of the apple. Is the apple improved? Is it better? It's a good question. But maybe because it's edible already as it's raw, maybe that's not classified as cooking on Shabbat. Turns out to be a machloket. The Rambam, when he codifies the halacha with regards to bishul and perek tet, halacha gimel, he says that something that is mebushal kol sarko, something that is cooked totally, completely, it does not have a din of bishul afterwards. Commenting on that, the Merkevita Mishnah, also the Radbaz, both of them indicate that something that is nechal kishuchai, it's eaten when it's raw, ein bo mishum bishul, does not have a din of bishul. It's a term that's borrowed from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, a term that's borrowed from bishulakum. Bishulakum, the din is that go davar shenechal shukuchai, any item that's eaten when it's raw, ein bo mishum bishulakum. No din of bishulakum. The Radbaz at least argues that maybe it should only be an Isur Derabanan. The Mishnah seems to say that it would be Mutar the Gamrei. Now, obviously, we're talking about here, this is a halachic geder. The case is clear that you're cooking. The apple changes from when it's raw into a cooked apple. Definitely has changed. Maybe it's Melechet Machshevet, because whoever's cooking it, there's certain people only eat their apples cooked. They're a little more picky. They only like their apples cooked, or that it's a bigger delicacy if it's a cooked apple. There are definitely tzadim to the other side. The Radbaz argues, based on the Rashba, and those that believe that machal ben drusai, cooking meat to the point of machal drusai makes it cooked for Shabbat. After that, if you cook, according to those Rishonim, there is no more cooking. Obviously, the Rambam disagrees. The Rif, they say that's to be mevushal kol tzorchot. But according to the Rishonim, who believe that machal ben drusai is sufficient to be called cooked meat, it's clear that after that, you are cooking the meat. Majority of people would not eat the meat when it's at machal ben drusai. Nevertheless, from a halachic standpoint, that's the end of cooking. And so the Radbaz argues that should be kal v'chomer here. If you eat the apple in that way, true. If you cooked it afterwards, it might be cooking, it might be improving it. But migeder halacha, that's not called bishul b'Shabbat. Mishnah Brura, when he quotes halacha, says that it's considered to be bishul legamrei. Peirot chayin, raw peirot that you cook, it's considered to be bishul. The Birka Yosef brings it down as a suffix. He doesn't know it's a machloket. He brings down the machloket of Rishonim. It says it's a safek. Just mentioning it because it's very interesting halachic dilemma. But Tosafot raises it here, not even in a straightforward way. Just having some mention, if you throw in the apples to the atmana, then you can't cover it anymore because you're cooking the apples. But he doesn't really discuss the fundamental issue of what is interesting about apples. Do apples, can you really cook apples? And if you can cook apples, what's considered to be the cooked apple?
The chunk and the potato in there, so that's
not the apple.
Right, so not here in Shabbat, but in Hilchot Brachot, Mara tells us that whatever is the primary way to eat an object, that will determine its bracha. Objects or vegetables that were eaten raw, the bracha would be bari pri adama. So not normally eaten raw, they would be shahakol ne'avid varo. So in the time of the Gemara, there was almost none of these vegetables were eaten raw. The bracha was shahakol. Clear that the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah clearly indicate that there's a change. And that they mentioned, we eat a lot more vegetables raw. Carrots, cucumbers, items that they only cooked, we eat raw. So there is a change in our view of these objects because now we make a bari pri adama even when they're raw. So there has been a change in the way that we view foods, and it may be true here with apples as well, that they didn't eat apples raw, they only ate them cooked. It could have been because of the strained apple, it could have just been the way that their diet was. But today we do eat apples raw, and that's true. It might even have impacted the din in terms of what's considered to be cooking. But just, I wanted to note that there is this machloket rishonim about apples or about the ability to cook apples. Right here, now back to the Gemara, Memchet Amud Aleph. Rabu v'Rab Zeira, Iklu l'Bei Reish Galuta. They went to visit, they were being hosted by the Reish Galuta. Chazu ala Hawa Abdo. They saw one of the servants, the Anach Kuza de Maya Apuma de Kumkuma. He put a pitcher of water on top of the mouth of the urn, the Mecham, the thing that was heating up the water. And the pitcher is full of cold water. So he's going to heat up the water. Nazir Rabbo. Rabbo chastised him. He said, you can't do that. Amalei Reb Zeira. Zeira said to him, Aishnami Mecham Agabi Mecham. Something that we're going to bump into, which is, what's the difference here between putting a pot on top of a pot? We're going to say later on that Mecham Agabi Mecham is Mutar. Even on Shabbat to be Machzir there. We're going to have a Mecham Agabi Mecham. Why over here is this any different? So Amalei Hotam Akume Kamukim. Over there, he's just maintaining the status quo. Hacha olude kamolid. Over here, he is beginning the cooking process. He is now heating it. Tosafot asks right away, I don't understand the case here. What is going on? What's the heat level of the two pots? When you have a mecham, agabi mecham, what's the heating? If it's yad soledet bo, if it's a level of yad soledet bo, then why is it any different than putting it into the mouth of the kumkum? If it's not yad soledet bo, and it's just to, you know, heat up the water to the point, lamafshir, to warm it up, then again, what's the issue at all with placing it over here? Tosafot is trying to discover what exactly the issue is here between what we saw with Mecham Agabi Mecham versus what's happening over here. Tosafot says something, and it's an important point, because Rashi disagreed earlier on. You remember, earlier on, we had, in the Gemara, a person has the ability to take a liquid, shemen or water, and to heat it up, as long as it doesn't reach Yad Soledet Bo. Rashi over there says, you can put it on the fire, anywhere it is, that it get heated up. You just have to remove it before it reaches Yad Soledet Bo. It's a big chiddush in Rashi. Rashi believes that we allow you, or give you the ability to remove it. You can put it in a place where it could reach Yad Soledet Bo, but then you just have to remove it before it hits that threshold. So Tosafot over here disagrees with that position of Rashi, and he says, V'nir l'rashbo, da'ad d'sharin l'tei kaiton shomayim k'neged ha'medura, and you're allowed to put a pitcher of water next to the fire, ha'ner b'rachok min ha'medura, sh'lo'olam lo yachol libo l'tei bisho. Has to be in a point where it can never reach Yad Soledet Bo. Aval b'karov asur, afilu afshir. If it's closer, even though you're going to remove it before it reaches Yad Soledet Bo, that is not permissible. Dilma mishtali, because maybe you're going to forget it, leave it there. Tosafot takes a fundamentally different approach. Rashi says you can put liquids there, heat them up, as long as you pull it before it hits Yad Soledet Bo. Tosafot says you can't put it in a position where it will reach Yad Soledet Bo. You can only put it in a position on the blech where you cannot reach Yad Soledet Bo. We don't trust you to take it off. We don't rely on you to take it off before it reaches Yad Soledet Bo. So then that explains what's transpiring over here. When we permit Mecham Agabi Mecham, that's only true if it can't reach Yad Soledet Bo. If the water is not cooked, if it's not in a position where it's cooked, then the only way we're going to let you do that is to warm it to the point where it's not Yad Soledet Bo. On the other hand, putting it on top of the kumkum, the pitcher on top of the kumkum is going to reach Yad Soledet Bo. And that's the distinction that he claims is being drawn here in the Gemara, is the placement of the object in a position where it can reach Yad Soledet Bo. Again, different than the way Rashi read the Gemara earlier, but that's the way Tosafot reads it in order to understand why, or what's happening here. What's the difference in the case of Mecham Agabi Mecham versus the case of placing the pitcher on top of the kumkum. Hadar Chazio, the Paras Distudar Apume Dukuba. Then he saw him also place a turban on top of, or on the mouth of the kuba, which is the barrel. Va'anach natla iluye. Then on top of that, he places a natla. Natla is the equivalent today like our washing cup. He places on top of that turban. Nazie Rabba. Again, Rabba chastised the servant for doing this. What's wrong? So Amarle, Rava says, back to Hashta Chazit. Just hang around, you'll see what goes wrong. So Sov Chazit, the Kama Atzarle, he saw that the servant was then squeezing out, wringing out the turban from the water that had gotten inside of it. So they had this turban that was placed on top of the barrel, on top of what was there. He left a Natla, which is a smaller cup. Basically, it's the equivalent of a ladle to take the items out. You have the Kankan itself, which is a large barrel. You want to scoop out, say, wine or whatever's inside of it. So you have a natla, which is a smaller cup that you dip in there to take out whatever's in the barrel. So he put this turban across and left the cup on top. What happens? That whatever was in the cup, or it was water, or it was washed out, that drips into the turban. And now the turban has liquid in it. So he went and wrung the turban out to get rid of whatever had fallen into the turban. Then the question he says is, Amalei, maishna mipromtka. Why is this different than a rag? Because we know that Rava says later on in the Masechta that you're allowed to put a bronka on top of the barrel. Over there he says you put it on top of the barrel as long as you don't cover the whole barrel. But he says you can put it on top without any problem. We don't worry about you wringing it out. We don't worry about schita there. So why not? Rava answers Rabbi Zeira that there's a difference. It's really a difference in the way that you interact with this item. A turban, your machpid, that it doesn't get wet, that it doesn't get dirty. So therefore, if something happens to it, what is he going to do? He's going to wring it out. We're worried about sochet or schita in that case, because that's not the natural state of the item. On the other hand, when you use a rag, the assumption is that the rag is going to get wet or it's going to get dirty. And therefore, we don't expect him to wring it out because he's not worried about the condition of the rag. So what you use is important because that'll determine how you interact with that item. It's velobetevin. Back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can't do Hatmano with Tevin. Vaimine Ravada Barmatna Beabaye. Ravada Barmatna has Sabaye Muchin Shitaman Behen. He used Muchin. Muchin, as Rashi defines in the Mishnah, things that are soft. Primary example that he gives is cotton. To using cotton, what is the din? Ma'ulutal Talan Bishabbat. Can you then carry them on Shabbat? Do they have a din of Muksa or not? For instance, or let's think about this outside the context of Hatmano. If you were not Matmin with this cotton, the cotton would be muksa, and it would be asur to take them because, as Rashi says, muksin hein lemelacha, asur letaltalan. Because there's no other purpose with the cotton, because what are you going to do with the cotton? You're going to make a beged. You make something out of the cotton. Anything that you're going to do with this cotton is going to be melechet isur, and therefore it's muksa on Shabbat, because there's no purpose to the cotton on Shabbat. It's raw materials for making something later on, and that making something is not relevant on Shabbat. So outside of the context of Atmono, clear that the Mukhin are Muksa. The question is now, since you've now corralled them into be used for Atmono, have you changed the status? Have you now made them that within that context of using them of Atmono, now they are Mutar the Tautel? So Amalei, Vichim Ibnei Shein Lo Kupashel Tevin, just because this guy is short on straw, Omeidu Mafkir Kupashel Mukhin, he goes ahead and he's willy-nilly, lets go of all of his cotton. He should have done Atmono with straw. He didn't have straw, so he used cotton instead. Just because he uses the cotton for Atmana, does that mean that he doesn't care about the cotton anymore? That he's just going to let it go? No, he's using the cotton temporarily as his material for the Atmana. But as soon as he finishes with it, he's going to go back to using it for his raw materials for his beged. As Rashi says, that it's Dameha Yikarim. This stuff is expensive. He's not just going to use it for Atmana. He's not going to leave it there. He hasn't permanently designated it as being for Hatmana, and therefore, it retains its status as being something that's Muksa. From Rashi, it sounds like it's Muksa Machmat Chisaron Kis, something that you would not use other than for its primary purpose, because it's expensive. Although it's interesting over here, because he is using it for something else, right? And he is, you know, corralling it to be used for Hatmana, but at least a person is just not going to leave it there. He's going to afterwards collect the cotton and then put it back as being a raw material for his bigadim. So lema misayale, let's say that we have something that helps a bayis position, that tomnim begizei tzemer, ubitzipei tzemer, ulushonot shel argaman, ubumuchin. One can do hatmana with gizei tzemer, which are balls of wool. Tzipei tzemer, it arises achar shenaf tzua v'shakua, kemin machalatzolot mashtichin, it's after they stretched it out and they pulled it out. So they make it into some sort of mat-looking form, the wool. So that's the next step. Ulubishonochil argaman is one step past that, which is that they made it purple, they dyed it, and they combed it out into longer strings before they're going to use it to weave with. So all of these items you can use for atmana, ubimuchin, and also the cotton, these soft objects that we're discussing. Ve'ein mitaltalin otam, and you're not allowed to carry them. Sounds like from this that these items you're allowed to utilize for hatmana, but their utilization for hatmana doesn't necessarily permit you to carry them around. It does not remove their shame muksa. They're still muksa afterwards. Im yishum ha, Gemara says, lo yirya. If that's your proof to Abaye, don't worry about it. Hachi kamar, I'll explain you that quote. Im lo taman bahen, ein metaltalin otan. Just add in a little phrase there. The ein metaltalin otan is not modifying when you use them for hatmana. It's telling them if you don't use them for hatmana, ein metaltalin otan, that they are mukse when they are not used for hatmana. Mar says, yachi mai the memra. What's that chiddush? Of course they're mukse. Why wouldn't they be mukse if you don't use them for hatmana? You're not using them for something that is mutar on Shabbat. So why shouldn't they be mukse? So ma'od utei mechazen mizgalayu, that they were uyin to use them for sitting on. They're a nice soft cushion. You could sit on them. And therefore, maybe they shouldn't be mukse. Right? There comes a teacher. Yes, they are mukse. From there, we don't have a proof to a bayis position. Bayis indicating that once you use them for hatmana, they still don't lose their shame muksa. We bring a brayta that seems to say exactly that. Gemara says, you don't have to read the brayta that way. Brayta could mean, when you use them for hatmana, they're fine. When you don't use them for hatmana, they're muksa. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is that maybe you thought you could use them for sitting on, and there might be some mutter, tashmish, and Shabbat. The answer is, kamashmon, that that's not their primary purpose, and they are muksa on Shabbat. It's true, but it's not enough of a primary usage to change that. I mean, that you would have thought that since they have this alternative to them, they're not automatically muksa. What we're trying to think is what's a person's mindset relative to this object going into Shabbat. Does a person think that this is in his world of Shabbat or doesn't think in his world of Shabbat? So if you give me a far-fetched case where maybe somebody will sit on them, does that really bring them into his mind that coming into Shabbat they're considered to be mukhan? Well, his answer is no. That's not something within his world. That's not his normal interaction or relationship with such an item. And therefore, when he comes into Shabbat, the normal way to react with these items is to put them outside the world of Shabbat. And you should know that's the question every time you come to muksa. That's the question that you have to ask is, what is the person's mindset coming into Shabbat? Certain items by default are muksa. You have to actively bring them into your world on Shabbat. Certain items are the default within your world. Food items that are edible are clearly not muksa automatically because they're normally within your worldview. You'd have to be mikatsa them in adat. You have to do something that pushes them out of that worldview. Other items, like we talked about, the wood for the fire, rocks, pebbles, that outside of your world on Shabbat, by default, they're muksa unless you bring them into your world. But anytime you talk about muksa, that's what you have to think of. You have to think about what is a person's normal frame of mind looking at such an object or interacting with such an object. That's what the Gemara is discussing over here. What's a person's frame of mind with regards to these materials? V'chista sharla dure udra the besajia b'shabto. V'chista permitted one to return the feathers, the stuffing of the pillow, back into the pillow on Shabbat. Beitavei Rav Chanan bar chista l'Rav Chista. So Rav Chanan bar chista asks Rav Chista, matirin beit atzavar b'shabbat, avalo potchim. So remember, one is you're allowed to open up the collar on Shabbat, but you can't create a collar on Shabbat. So for instance, when they used to either launder them or when they used to make them, they used to tie the collar down. And so in order to put your head into it, you need to open up the collar. That's permitted for both to do because you're not doing anything that wasn't there beforehand. The collar existed beforehand. You're just equivalent of opening up the button to allow you to put your head in. On the other hand, if you have a clothing or a piece of cloth that doesn't have a hole in it, so you can't insert your head into it, to make that hole for the collar to allow one to insert their head, that you cannot do on Shabbat. And one may not place the stuffing, the feathers, back into the pillows or the mattresses on Yom Tov. And certainly not on Shabbat. Sounds like you cannot return the stuffing to the pillows and the mattresses. And yet, we just had a statement from Rav Chista that said it's totally permissible on Shabbat. Where it says, Lukasha abacharate habatike. Depends if it's new or if it's old. Dani nami ochi. We have a brayta that supports that differential. Einot nimet amukim lo l'toch hakar v'lo l'toch hakeset. B'yom tov. Person may not put the stuffing, the feathers, into the pillows, the mattresses on Yom Tov. Ein tzarech lomar b'shabbat. Nashru. If they were released, meaning that they opened up and some of it spilled out. Machzirin otam b'shabbat. You're allowed to return them on Shabbat. Ein tzarech lomar b'yom tov. It's certainly on Yom Tov, then you can't do it. So the difference here is between, in the first place, placing it in there, versus returning it to there afterwards. Rashi says, Bechadatei, Shelo ayumi olam lo tocho asur da hashta avid leimano. So you're creating a kli then. You're making something. You are engineering a pillow, a mattress on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, and that's not permissible to make a mono, to make a kli. Once they're already a kli, then to return the stuffing to them, you're not changing its status. You're maintaining the status quo. And these items are not muksa because they're in your world. Like we said before, the possibility to sit on them would be mutar. Over here, where you've already designated them to be a pillow or a mattress, it's clear that in your mindset or mind frame that these items are mutar on Shabbat. You plan to use them for those purposes that are mutar on Shabbat. And therefore, they're not muksa, and you can return them to the pillow or to the mattress. Now the Gemara goes back to discuss this issue of opening up the collar. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Haputeach Beit HaTzavar B'Shabbat Chayav Chatat. Someone opens up a collar on Shabbat is chayav achatat for opening up, for cutting in a collar. Rashi claims, Tahashta, Rashi says, k'mashav le'imano, because now you're making it into a kli. Chayav mishum makeh bepatish. V'anu gemar melacha. Yichayav for mateh bepatish, because you are finishing off the beged. You are now putting in the collar, which will now make it functional and useful for you to put your head through it. So you're doing something that you have here, you've weaved or you've created or stitched this huge piece of cloth, and now you want to make it give you the ability to put your head into it, so you need to cut out a beit tzavar, cut out a collar. So that will be considered to be makeh patish according to Rashi. Other Rishonim discuss the possibility that the problem here is simply korea, tearing. Tearing on Shabbat is a melacha. We're going to get to that in the Mishnah, in the seventh parak, which says there that ripping is considered to be a form of melacha. But it's only a korea, amanat, litfor. It has to be constructive tearing. It cannot be tearing for a destructive purpose, but it has to be constructive tearing, where you're going to tear it in order to stitch it up. You're doing something that's constructive with the tearing. That seems to be what's happening over here, that the tearing is done in a constructive manner. So some of the Rishonim believe that the problem here is a problem of Korea, not a problem of Makeh Patish. Again, it depends on your view of Korea. The Rishonim have different views of when these types of items are considered to be a malachar or not. So you have to look in general about these malachot that are, in general, destructive malachot. If you do them in a constructive manner, does that make it automatically that it's a malachot? The Rishonim here are discussing that issue. Matkiv la Rav Kahana. Kahana asked, is that really true? Ma ben zul megufat chavit. What's the difference between this and the cover of a barrel? Rashi claims this is a Mishnah later on in the Masechta. It's a very, very important Mishnah. We won't get into it today, but this is, a Mishnah is the fundamentals about opening up bottles, cans, and everything on Shabbat. That's what that Mishnah is addressing, and that's where all the shittot and all the differences and opinions about what you can do on Shabbat derive from this Mishnah. That Mishnah says two things over there. The Mishnah begins and says, Mevi adam chavit, the person can bring a barrel, umatiz et rosha, the saif, and it can slice off the top of the barrel with a sword, umenicha lifnei arachim, and then place it before the guests. Over there, where he slices off the top, he's not doing a clean slice. You know, he's not taking it off carefully with the top of the barrel. He slices off the top completely. And he opens it up and presents it to the people that are there. So that is the source for opening up items on Shabbat, food items, in order to be able to eat them on Shabbat. The Mishnah then continues and says one may not drill a hole into the Megufat HaChavit. One cannot put a hole into the seal that is around the top of the barrel in order to create an opening to pour the food out of it. Rashi claims that the questions from the first half of the Mishnah. How come over there you can slice off the top, open it up, without any problem? And over here, you can't open up the Beit HaTzavar. What's the difference between opening up cutting up in the top of the barrel and cutting open a hole to put your head into in the Beit HaTzavar? He says that's the challenge. And then Amar Le'Rova, Zeh Chibor V'Zeinu Chibor. The difference between when being attached and not being attached, Rashi says. You look at a beged, wherever you're going to put that collar, before you put the collar there, it's all one entity. Everything's connected. There's no separation between the entities there. It's one woven beged, it's one stitched beged, and you could put the collar anywhere. I mean, technically, you could put it anywhere because they all look the same. The whole area looks the same. Where you choose to put the collar is a matter of convenience or a matter of utility. On the other hand, by a barrel, when you talk about the top of a barrel, there's a barrel, and then you seal the cover onto the barrel. The cover is separate from the barrel itself. And being separate from the barrel itself, it's not considered to be a chibur. Even though it's sealed onto it, nevertheless, it's not considered to be one entity. And if it's not one entity, that's why you can open it, as opposed to the beta tzavar. According to Rashi, that's the difference. So Sofo challenges that, and it's clear from the Mishnah there, I'm not sure how Rashi is going to address this, that when he says you cut open the megufat achavit there, it's not along the lines of the cover. You cut it open, it sounds like there that you're mekalkel, as Rashi says. Rashi himself says it on the Mishnah there, that it's a mekalkel on Shabbat. Mekalkel is patur aval asur, if you do something destructive. But if it's l'shem ochel, if it's for food, the chachamim made a dispensation that it's allowed. But what's mekalkel? Mekalkel is not simply opening up the top of the barrel, slicing off. It means cutting it to the point where you're cutting on top of the barrel itself. And therefore, Tosafot says the question comes from the second part of that Mishnah, the part where you drill a hole into the top. Because the megufa eino min achavit. The difference being is that the seal that you drill the hole into to allow the ochel to come out to is not a part of the chavit. Eino chibur. It's separate from the chavit. Whereas here, when you're putting, like you're saying, a new hole, you're cutting open something totally new into the beged itself. So therefore, over there, it says that it's only osur midrabanan to do that. They put the hole in there, and over here it's asur midoraita, yachayiv chatat. The question is, why is there a difference? How come here it's doraita, and over there it's the rabbanon? The answer being that it's a difference in what you're entering into. Drilling into there, whether it's the cover itself or the sealant around it, there it's separate from the chavit. That's why you only isur derabbanon. Well, here you have an isur doraita because the hole that you're creating is in the beged itself. So now, Rami le Rabbi Yirmiyah the Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Yirmiyah said to Rabbi Zeira, I have a stira here between two Tanaic works. And I want you to help me reconcile it. It's not. You have a Mishnah in Uksin that says, Shalal shel kufsim, v'shol shelet shel maftechot. A beged shu tafur b'kilayim, chibur l'tuma ad sheyatchil l'atir. All of these items are considered to be connected for the din of tuma. Shalal shel kufsim is the wanderer used to tie a string through a number of begadim to keep them together. Right, the equivalent today of what they do to put a tag on your item when you take it to the dry cleaner. Or how they identify your clothing, but here they used to string a whole bunch of clothing together. Or we're talking about a shulshelet shel maftechot, a ring of keys that joins them together to make them into a single item for tumah. That means if some tumah touches one of the items, they all become tameh. Even though had they been separate, if you touched one piece of clothing and it was touching another piece of clothing, the second piece of clothing would have no bearing on it, because tumah doesn't move from keli to keli. It only moves from an abba tumah to a rishon the tumah and a keli, and that's it. So the Rishon L'Tumah will not pass Tumah to another Keli. But here, since they're attached, they're considered to be one item. Touch one piece of the clothing, it affects all the clothing at once. Until you begin to undo them. You have to take an action to undo the connection between them. You don't have to actually get them apart. As long as you begin to take them apart, that's sufficient to remove this attachment. Alma, from this you would conclude, Shelo b'shat melacha nabi chibur. That even when the koves, the launderer, is not laundering, they're still considered to be one item until you release them. Until they're released, they're considered to be one item, whether he's doing the work, laundering or not laundering, they're considered to be one item. Fereminu. But now I have another Tanaic work from the Mishnah Kili, Makel, Shasa Yad Kardum. Picks up a branch, a stick, a twig off the ground, and he makes it as a handle for the Kardum, for the hoe. He basically, you know, the wooden part of the hoe, the rake that you insert into the metallic part below. But he doesn't have the perfect handle. He sees a twig, some put some wood on the ground. He says, look, I can use that for my handle now. He takes it out, puts it into the metal, and begins to use it. Chibur l'tuma b'shat melacha. It's only considered a chibur l'tuma when you are utilizing it for whatever purpose it is. B'shat melacha in, shizlo b'shat melacha, lo. It's only true when you're working with it, when you're hoeing, when you're doing some sort of activity with it, then it's considered to be a chibur. As soon as you stop doing your activity, then it's not considered to be a chibur. So the stira between these two mishnayot is simple. In one case, we have something that is considered to be temporary in nature. Both of them are considered to be temporary in nature. And in one of them, it remains attached despite the fact that you're not utilizing it for the purpose that it was set out. For instance, the stringing of the clothing to launder it. Even when you're not laundering, it's still considered to be connected. On the other hand, when you make something into a handle, it's only considered to be a handle while you're utilizing it. If you're not utilizing it, it's not a handle. That was the question posed by Rabbi Yirmiyah to Rabbi Zera. And Rabbi Zera responds, difference is how one interacts with this item. When you finish using your handle for your hoe, what do you do with it? It says you throw it out. You throw it with the rest of the wood. It's not something that you keep. It's not something that you retain in this position. As soon as you finish using it, you throw it out. You toss it back to where you found it. Even when you're not using it for the purpose, laundering. Because if they get dirty again, the launderer can then launder them easily once again. So here he has customers that bring him the laundry. So then he does the laundry, then he's hanging them out. What happens if they fall off the line? Something happens, they get dirty again. So he's not going to want to have to string them all up again. If they're already pre-strung, he can go back quickly and launder them. So he's not going to undo the string until he's really finished, until he gives them back. So to retain them in that state is beneficial to him, and that's what he wants. He says the difference is in the way that you interact with these items. Again, even though both of them are done for a specific purpose, after that purpose is done, is there value to you? So in the case of the handle, it sounds like, no, you toss this. It's an object that is considered to be, quote-unquote, disposable. It's not something that you would retain in this situation. And therefore, as soon as you finish using it or utilizing it, it's done. Whereas in the other case, the stringing of the item is something that is beneficial, even outside the context of its primary purpose. And therefore, you want it to remain that way. And it's not considered to be, again, disposable or removable until you do remove it. And that's the difference in the conclusion of these two mishnayot. Beged shetofer b'kalayim, as Rashi points out here, Tosafot seconds it, that the answer and the question revolve around shalal shel kofsim. Only revolves around that one issue. The beged shel kilayim, there, what you do is you're stitching them together. We know you're going to take them apart eventually because it's kilayim, so you can't wear it that way. But until that point in time, you stitch the extra piece together to keep it there or to store it that way. So as long as it's stitched together, we know that you want it to be together in order to keep it. You didn't want to lose this piece of material. Stitched a tzemer beged with another tzemer beged and you used a string of pishtan. Obviously, it's not a permanent. You're not going to leave it there permanently. But as long as it's there, you're happy because you want to keep the two items together. So they were less worried about it. And I don't think the stira that he asks revolves around that. Because there's no issue of malacha. Malacha is where you're utilizing it for a very specific purpose, like by the shalal shel kofsim versus the handle of the rake. So I don't think the question was posed about that. And I don't think the answer relates to that either. Because that's a very, very, it's a different type of problem. It's not an issue of a craftsman doing his craft or working. Alright, so now the Gemara continues. Besura matnula lahashmaita da mishmeda Rav Chisda. In Surah, the upcoming statement, they said in the name of Rav Chisda. Pupumbatuta matnula mishmeda Rav Kana. And Pupadita, they said in the name of Rav Kana. Vamri lo mishmeda Rav, and some say in the name of Rav. Mantana da milta. Who's the author of this position, Damar Rabbanan? Anything that's attached to it has the same din as it. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Rav. Rabbi Meir, it's Rabbi Meir. Titznan. How do we know this? Titznan. We have a Mishnah in Kelim. Beit Pach, Ubeit Tavlin, Ubeit Ner Shebikira. So if you have a stovetop like we've been talking about, stove that is shaped where it's wider at the bottom, narrows at the top, has a place to put the pot on top, it's heated from the inside. But along with the fact that it has a space on the top for placing a pot, on the sides it has what I would call pockets. It has like a cup holder, the equivalent of what would look like a cup holder, on the side for the placement of other items. So these other items, for instance, beit pach, which is where you put oil to heat it up or to warm it up, beit ner placement where you could put a candle, or whether it's to melt something for a candle, and the place where you have the spices that are ready for the pot. But whatever they are these cup holders or sidebars to the kira that are receptacles on the side. What is the status of those receptacles in relationship to the stove or the oven itself? Mitamim b'maga, ve'ei mitamim b'avir, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that they have tumat maga, but they do not have tumat avir, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon mitaher. Shimon says there, tahor the gamrei. Bishlam ala Rabbi Shimon, I understand Rabbi Shimon's position, kazabar lav kikira damu. They are not like the stove itself. They are considered to be totally separate kelim and be assumed as separate kelim. Therefore, if tumah touches the kira, these areas remain tahor. If Tumah comes into the airspace of the Kira, it's made of Klicheres. Klicheres can be Mekabel Tumah, even its airspace. Tumah comes into the airspace, they're not impacted. And the same is true the other way around. If Tumah touches those areas, or comes into that airspace, they will be Tameh, and not the Kira. They're considered to be totally separate utensils. So I understand the position of Rabbi Shimon. What I don't understand is the position of Rabbi Meir. The Rabbi Meir, make up your mind. Ila kekira damu. If they're considered to be one with the kira, afilu be'avir nami litamu. It should also be tamei in their airspace. Why is it that Rabbi Meir says if Tumah touches the kira, then these areas also become tamei? Why doesn't he also say if Tumah comes into the airspace of the kira, they're also impacted? That's the way that Kli Cheres accept Tumah. So why is there a differential between them? If lav kekira damu, if they're also not like the stovetop, meaning that they're considered to be separate, because he says when Tumah comes into the avir of the kira, it doesn't impact these receptacles. Afilu b'maga nami lo litamo. Then even by contact, when the Tumah touches the kira, it should also not impact them. You have to be consistent. You're inconsistent in your din here. Are they a part of it or are they not a part of it? And once you decide that it is, be consistent in the din. If it is a part, then both Tumat Maga and Avir should affect them. If they're not, then neither Tumat Maga or Tumat Avir should affect them. Where it says, Leolam, Lav, Kikira, Domu. Truthfully, they have nothing to do with the Kira. They're considered to be separate receptacles. For Rabbanan, the Gazru Bahu. It's Gzerat Rabbanan. Where it says, Gazru Bahu, Rabbanan, then Afilu Bavir, Namilitamu. If they make it a din, they're Rabbanan, that we consider them to be one. Even though they're not one, why don't we say that when Tumah comes into the Avir Kli Cheres, it also affects them? Avdu Bahu Rabbanan Hekera. Because when Truma and Kodashim become Tmeim, what do you do with Truma and Kodashim that are Tameh? You burn them. But that's only true when they're Tameh Mida Oraita Mina Torah. Because now, if they're Tameh Mida Torah, then they're Ru'uyim L'Sreifa, and you burn them. If they're only Tameh Mida Rabbanan, that means Mina Torah, they're really Teorim. If they're Teorim, you're not allowed to burn Truma and Kodashim that are Teorim, Mina Torah. So if they only become Tamei the Rabbanan, then you have to wait. It's called Talui. You wait until either they rot or they come into a full force of Tumah, and then you can burn them, or then you can get rid of them. So how do I know or differentiate between something that's Tamei the Rabbanan and something that's Tamei the Oraita? So we've seen this before, that the Rabbanan differentiated by making the Alochos not exactly like it would be Mina Torah. Mina Torah, that you're considered to be one utensil, considered to be a single item, then Tumah would affect them both if it came into contact with the Kira or when it went into the airspace of the Kira. So the Rabbanan said, we're going to make them into one receptacle. We have this Gzera de Rabbanan. But in order that people be sure, understand that this is only Tumah de Rabbanan, we're going to only say when Tumah comes into contact with the Kira, they Tumahim. But if Tumah comes into the airspace of the Kira, they will not be impacted. And that's how the person will know that there is only Tumah de Rabbanan here, not Tumah de Oraita. Okay, Tan Rabbanan. Misporet shel prakim. Scissors that are made up of two blades, which that's the normal way, that's normally how scissors are made, out of two blades, but their blades, shel prakim, meaning that they come apart. It says they used to put the blades together to make them into scissors, but they were detachable. The ismel shel rehitni, and the razor that goes into a plane. If you know a carpenter's plane, it's a blade that sits, you have the wooden item that he uses to push the blade along, but then there's a blade at the bottom which allows him to run it along and to plane the boards. So that is this, izemo is this razor that is also a removable part, put in, taken out. Chibor the Tumah. They're considered to be a chibor with the garbei Tumah, vein chibor the Hazaah. But they're not considered to be attached to Hazaah. Mara says again, monafshach. Tell me, you gotta be consistent. I chiboru, if they're considered to be one item, afilu Hazaah nami, then even for Hazaah. When we're talking about Hazaah here, this is Hazat mechatat. This is to make them tahor. Sprinkling of the para Tumah onto the item to make them tahor. So, do you have to separate the items out and sprinkle on each one independently? Or, when they're attached, can you sprinkle on them? So here, what we're suggesting over here in the Tosefta of Kelim is that for Tumah, if they're together, if you touch one blade, the other blade's automatically Tameh. If you touch the razor, then the plane is also Tameh. But, if you want to come to be Metayer them, you have to separate them, to break them apart, and sprinkle on each blade separately. Separate on the blade and the plane separately. So, Gemara says it's inconsistent. Well, are they one, or are they not one? You gotta be, it's either one or the other. So, afilu azanami, ilav chibur, if they're not considered to be one, afilu zumanami lo. So, amarova, dvar torah, b'shat melacha chibur, says when you're utilizing them, when they're being used, then they are chibur, ben l'tuma, ben l'azah. Then, whether it's to accept Tumah, or whether it's to accept the Tahara from the Hazah, then they're considered to be one item. Shelo b'shat melacha, when that being utilized, when they're not in their functional state, enu chibur lo lutumah v'lo l'hazah.
then they're not considered to be a chibur, whether it's for tumah hazah. So then how do we get to the din that we have in the Tosefta? Because Rabbanan al tumah shalom b'shat melacha, b'shum tumah shibishat melacha. The Rabbanan would go there on tumah, not at the time of melacha, because of tumah b'shat melacha. Basically, they went to Chumrah on both Tadim, which is that in one instance it is Tameh, one instance it's not Tameh. When is it Tameh? When is it considered Bechibor? When they're together. So what are we worried about? We're worried about when they're together, you're not going to realize that they are considered one. So even when they're separate, or even when it's not Shat Malacha, we're going to say that they were Mekabel Tumah, because when they are together, they are Mekabel Tumah, and Hazah the other way around. When they're not Bishat Malacha, the Hazah doesn't work. So we're not going to let you do the Hazah when they are together, Bishat Malacha, because we're afraid that you might do it even when it's not Bishat Malacha. So we took the Shnei Tzadim L'Chumra in order to prevent there being a problem. We made it Tameh all the time, and made Hazah not work all the time. And again, the Halacha we know is consistent. The underlying Halacha Midaraita is consistent, which is Bishat Malacha, they're considered to be a Chibur. Shalom Bishat Malacha, they're not considered to be a Chibur. Tosafot over here says, what happened to all the other cases before? The chibur that we talked about before, for instance, shlal shel kovsim, when you string up the clothing, is that considered to be a chibur just for tumah, or is that also a chibur for hazah? What's the din over there? And with the second case we had over here, what we had with the stovetop, there you don't have to ask the question because it's a klicheres. Klicheres doesn't have any hazah. So the only question is whether it's a chibur for tumah. There's no chibur for tahara. You can't be mitahara a klicheres. The only way to be mitahara a klicheres is to break it. There's no question. But how do you deal with shlal shel kovsim? So Tosfot comes up with a principle. It says, "V'teir tzarid, the shlal shel kovsim v'adai lo evi chibur elam midrabanan. Afilo b'shat melacha, she'inim tzrichim ze laze." Even at the time that you're doing the work, they're not considered to be one entity, because you don't have to have them that way. That's not their natural state. The Begadim are clearly independent entities, and you're stringing them together for specifically for this purpose. And in doing that, you are not creating a chibur midoraita. So the chibur here is only midorabanan, and therefore, the tumah is all derabanan, and hazah will never work. Hazah will never work. Whether b'shat melacha, shlo b'shat melacha, hazah is not relevant, because there really no chibur over here. The chibur is all a din derabanan, because that is not their natural state. On the other hand, aval misporet shel prakim, shitolei b'shat melacha v'chibur dvar Torah, kemin shemishamshim shneim tashmish echad. Because the point of having two blades is together, they work together. And they need each other. And that is why, midoraita, they're considered to be a chibur b'shat melacha. So that's the difference. You have to look, whenever something's attached, you have to look at what is the natural state of that item. If the natural state of the item is to be attached, then midoraita will be a chibur, if that's in its functional state. Whereas, if the chibur is simply a matter of convenience, then that will only be a chibur midrabanan. I just want to finish up to the Mishnah, only because tomorrow is a long daf, and it's a very fast Gemara. Ibai lehu. Lachim achmat atzman, odil malachim achmat avar acher. Our Mishnah says, bizman shein lachim, the second list of items there, only when they are moist are they considered to be problematic. When they are dry, they're not. Question is, that moisture, is that the natural moisture of the item? Or is that a exogenous moisture that came in here? It's a moisture that was added to them. So tashma, lo b'tevin, v'lo b'zagim, v'lo muchim, v'lo b'asavim, is v'ansheim lachim. So we're talking about here, straw, zagim are grape peels, muchim, we said before, soft items, cotton, v'lo b'asavim, and herbage. It's v'ansheim lachim. I'm our pishlum alachim, achmat tavar acher, shapir, I understand it. I'm our lachim, achmat atzman, muchim, lachim, achmat atzman, echim ishkachala. Cotton, soft items, wool, they don't have natural moisture to them. So how could it be that you're talking about their own moisture? Where it says, Mimarta de Beni Atme. We're talking about the wool that is removed from between the legs of the animal, where there's a lot of sweat, there's a lot of heat, or whether it's around their reproductive organs, where they naturally get wet. There is a natural moisture to them from the animal. They're called Mimarta. Marta means to pull away or to rip away, because that wool comes away without shearing it. It simply is pulled off because of the nature of where it is. Bahad and Tani Raboshia, Tomnim Biksut Yuvesha, Upireut Yuveshim, Avalo Biksut Lacha, Avalo Biksut Lachim. But what does this mean? That you can do atmana with dry clothing or dry fruit. Aval lo b'ksut lacha v'lo b'perot lachim. Not with something that is moist. Ksut lacha machmat atzmai chamishkachala. Again, how do you have natural moist clothing that doesn't exist? It says again, mimarta de beni atme. It was made out of that wool that you took from between the legs that was moist. So you made it out of that. So there is the natural moisture to the clothing. So the Gemara leaves that inconclusive as to whether the moisture is deriving from the object itself, whether it's deriving from an outside item. All right, we'll stop there.